Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today's episode is brought to you by Pluto TV. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. No credit card needed. No sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy over there, a cuddly little urchin. Well, that's Tim Dennis at the Supernatural News Desk. How are you, you cuddly little urchin?
Cuddly little urchin. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. I'm well. Good. We had a really interesting True Crime Tuesday again this last week. We've had a lot of really great ones. I love the Hollywood Godfather episode you did 2 weeks ago.
Oh, thank you.
This Pamela Smart episode, I'm getting a lot of interesting emails on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's funny to me, though, is I got to be honest with you. It kind of pisses me off. Can I go on a little bit of a rant, Tim?
Sure.
You mind if I pull up a soapbox here?
Go ahead.
I've got people that are self-proclaimed Pamela Smart experts.
Okay.
Because they've read every news article on it. Mm-hmm. And I think they're missing the point. That's what this episode was about, was giving you a different side.
Sure.
One that isn't just rhetoric that's spewed over and over and over and over again by mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people write me, oh, this is BS, and that's not what really happened. And then I say, well, how, and I've asked a few of them, how do you know? Well, I've read about it. Okay. Well, you understand that sometimes there are bad news stories out there. And if you listen to the episode, well, I don't even need to waste my time. Well, then you're ignorant. Because the fact is that this does expose a new light on the story. And as I was clear in saying, for those of you that haven't listened to it, on the episode, I say, I'm not going one way or the other. Is she guilty or innocent? What I am saying is she deserves another day in court. And there were, just to give our listeners some quick info, Pamela Smart, if you saw the movie To Die For with Nicole Kidman, that movie is based loosely on the Pamela Smart story. The author admits it. She took the headlines. She wrote her novel just off the headlines. She made all fictional characters, but followed the newspaper accounts. You have to remember that when this case broke, it was the first one to be featured on court TV. I don't mean necessarily the channel court TV, but I mean it was the first court proceedings. But they didn't run it 24/7. They only picked pieces of what they were going to show. So people watching at home never got the full story. The jurors were never sequestered. So they were able to hear about what had aired that day on TV. And they were getting feedback and seeing newspaper articles and op-ed articles about it. The whole thing was tainted from start to finish. Plus, many of the claims that were made were just false, plain false statements. The biggest piece of evidence they have against this woman has been proven to be edited and manipulated. And the gentleman who provided the evidence has since been arrested and convicted for tampering with evidence, and I think it was three other cases. Isn't that what they said, Tim?
Something like that, yeah.
So it's pretty remarkable to me, you know, that many of you who really say you're true crime aficionados don't want to explore both sides of the story. Unless you had boots on the ground, you don't know the story. Well, I've read it, and I've seen every documentary. Again, you don't know the story. educate yourself. Listen to another side of the story. If afterwards, if after listening, you say, you know what, Dave and Tim, you're full of shit. This lady's guilty. That's okay. At least I know that you've taken the chance to listen to something you've already subscribed to, right? You paid for it. Just give it a listen. Plus, you know, Tim and I, we always bring a different slant to these interviews. And in most interviews, our guests tell us, boy, that's a great question. Or, you know, that's something that nobody ever asks. Or, you know, we get to some of these points. And there are some key elements to this story that people need to understand. As a matter of fact, here's one key element that still drives me mad. One of the eyewitnesses, one of the participants in the actual crime, Tim, is quoted saying, yes, I remember when this happened. I did this. She did that. I did this. And he was quoting a scene from the movie To Die For, which was a fictional account. It was written by a novelist, written by a screenwriter, not on any actual testimony. So his memory is he's quoting a movie that was loosely based on the crime that he committed. And that's what's keeping this woman, a big part of what's keeping this woman in prison. So again, unless you're fully educated, just listen to the show and let it sink in. And why it's important is because we are all individuals and we are all, I guess, vulnerable to this kind of justice. And we'd like to think we're not until we are. So in these cases, I encourage you, challenge yourself. Listen to these stories. For those of you that haven't subscribed, you should. We've got a great program every Tuesday, True Crime Tuesday, where we talk a myriad of different types of crimes, from the just straight up bizarre to frightening to funny to just unbelievable. Plus, of course, we always bring you Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals. So you get a good deal. And when you subscribe, it's $5 a month. That gives you access to every brand new episode. So if you were only getting that, it's only $1.25 an episode. That's a steal. But you also get access to the last 2 years of the program. So you get a lot of value for that $5 a month. So subscribe to it. You can find it over at darknessradio.com. Or if you have a Droid device, download the free Darkness Radio app. If you have a Droid device, Darkness Radio app. And once you've got that, you can access our shows, subscribe through the app, and then that way you can access all of the programming that I'm a part of, Midnight in the Desert, Beyond the Darkness, and True Crime Tuesday. But I'll get off my soapbox. It's just funny to me how many people make a predetermined decision off of what they've read without realizing that a lot of what's being written is just information that's been rehashed and nothing new came of it. This is newer information. This is stuff that has been lost and needs to be brought out to the public again.
Definitely. It's if anything else, just it's interesting to take a different look at the case from a different perspective. And like right. you said, just kind of clear your mind and take a different look at it. You know, I always like to look at different perspectives as well. You know, whether I agree with it or whether I disagree with it, it's always good to take a fresh look at stuff.
And it really does give you a different perspective. Right. Mm-hmm. And when you realize that claims that they were made, first of all, you know, when you say, oh, well, all these claims, blah, blah, just realize one thing was they kept billing her as the seductress teacher. We even put it in our description. Right. The seductress teacher. The reason I do that is because that's part of the false narrative. Was she the seductress teacher or was she something else? She was something else. And when you listen to the episode, you'll find out what it really was. She was not a teacher. She was not in a place of authority over these children, like they said. Not that it makes it any better, but, you know, if the media could not get the simplest thing right, like her profession, why should you believe everything else you've read in the media regarding the Pamela Smart case?
Yeah, sure, very true. Very true.
Dave, what the hell does this have to do with the paranormal? Well, I just, you know, I like to talk about the different aspects of all the projects that we're a part of. And many of you like the crossover, and we've done true crime on the show and on the True Crime Tuesday program. So I just wanted to bring that up. But, we have an educated audience, and I just think that sometimes they pinch themselves short when they don't actually open their mind to the concepts of some of the what we represent on the show. You don't have to agree with it, but open up and listen to it. That's all I ask.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Mr. Dennis. The time is upon us for supernatural news. I see that in front of you, a large stack has amassed over the last week, as has one in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where should we begin this week in the world of weird?
Well, I thought Florida would be a good place to to, you know, launch, so to
Tim,
speak.
Tim, this isn't True Crime Tuesday.
No.
We don't need to go to Florida, Tim.
No, I know, but it's always a good place to start, Dave. Especially when I use the word launch, Dave, because this one has to do with a boat stranded in the ocean. It just so happens that two Florida teens stranded in a boat. What would you think they'd be doing out there if they were stranded in a boat, Dave? You think it'd be something sinful? That's what I would think. But it turns out that when they became stranded in the ocean, they ended up praying, Dave. I would think that'd be the last thing they'd be doing.
No, well, actually, they weren't even in a boat when they were stranded. If I remember this, they were out swimming and kind of the riptide pulled them out like 2 miles away from course.
They
couldn't swim.
Pardon me. That's right. They were saved by a boat named Amen after a desperate prayer for help. Well, they ended up praying, Dave. I would think that you're out in the middle of the ocean, you'd be,
What?
I don't even think
that's possible.
Well, come on.
First of all, water?
A guy with that many
kids? Second of all, you know, you want sharks and manatees and mermaids watching you do the dirty in the water?
Well, if the mermaids are holding the camera, why not? Just saying.
It's weird.
So, just saying. Two Jacksonville, Florida teens are lucky to be alive after getting stranded at sea. Tyler Smith and Heather Brown, both 17, were enjoying senior skip day at the beach on April 18th. The two are students at Christ Church Academy or Christ Church Fried Chicken. I hear that's pretty good, too. But Christ Church Academy and have been friends since fourth grade. Smith and Brown were swimming off Volano Beach near St. Augustine, where they realized they were about 2 miles from shore and might not make it back. Tyler tells Fox 35 that he and Heather fought the waves for 2 hours, becoming weak and tired. And that's when he said they started praying to God. It seems their prayers were answered when Captain Eric Wagner and his crew found them. Wagner posted the encounter to his Facebook page. And in the post itself, Dave, Eric Wagner posted, "Most unbelievable day. This really happened. We're bringing my boat, the Amen, from Delray to New Jersey. The wind is 15 to 20 knots. And the seas are rough, but we decided to go out anyway, an adventure. Had to keep her at 13 knots to maintain control so the engines were loud." The video was from earlier that day. "Nearly 2 miles out, over all the wind, waves, and engines, we thought we heard a desperate scream. 200 yards behind us, we saw an arm flail over the swells. Troy started the U-turn, and then it went on from there. Nearly 2 miles out, over all the wind, waves, and engines, he said, we thought we heard a desperate scream. 200 yards behind us, we saw an arm flail over the swells." That's the quote from the Facebook post. Wagner wrote that the couple was too weak to climb aboard the boat themselves, so his crew pulled them to the swim deck. Both were shivering and pale. His lips were white. She was lucid. He seemed to be struggling to answer our questions, but was coherent, is what Wagner went on to say. He called the Coast Guard as he took his boat, the Amen, to their rescue. Wagner wrote that he had decided to bring his boat from Delray Beach to New Jersey that day, despite the rough waters. Tyler and Heather were thankful for that decision. Tyler went on to tell Fox News, "From us crying out to God for him to send someone for us to keep living and a boat named Amen, there's no way it wasn't him." So there you go.
That is pretty amazing.
That is amazing. Right? Yeah.
You're praying, "Lord, hear my cry. I'm in the water and I need help." Something like that. Do you think that's what the prayer was like?
I got to think it was something similar. Yeah.
Yeah. And then a boat named Amen hears you.
Yeah.
Over the sound of their roaring engines and the sound of the waves, the seagulls chirping. Do seagulls chirp?
I think they do. I know they take your French fries when you throw them up in the air.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
They do. You know, actually, yeah. I took my son when he was young, about 6 years old, to Disney World in Orlando, Tim. And we were dive bombed. My son had a hot dog in his hand. And it was about half a hot dog. And this effing seagull, right? This rat with wings flew down and hammered my son and then grabbed his hot dog and took off with it. Mine. Son of a biscuit.
If you take a handful of french fries, if you've got a whole swarm of them like up in the air, if you take a handful of french fries and you throw it up in the air, not one will hit the ground.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So just throw a handful at somebody you don't like and watch them just get swarmed?
No, I didn't say that.
Is that what you're trying to say, Tim? You're trying to elicit hate crimes with French fries and seagulls, Tim?
No, Dave.
Shame on you, Tim.
No, Dave, I didn't say anything like that. What I said was you throw them up in the air at the seagulls and not one will come down. They'll eat them.
Yeah. Since we're on a religious rant, or not a rant, but a religious edge here with the story of the ship named Amen saving two children out swimming and about to drown. Mm-hmm. I've got one more religious feel-good story for you, Tim.
Okay.
Several conspiracy theorists have long been alleging that aliens have visited Earth regularly during the ancient days, and even now. They used to pay us a visit to monitor human activities. Adding heat to this theory, Dr. Barry Downing, a popular ufologist, has now claimed that Jesus Christ is actually an alien from deep space. As per Downing, several incidents depicted in the Bible indicate that aliens used to visit Earth in the old days, Tim. Downing argues that the world's purportedly oldest UFO sighting is mentioned in the book of Ezekiel. He also revealed to express.co.uk reports that evidence of extraterrestrial activity can be seen in the Gospel of St. Matthew in the New Testament. Downing also believes that the embryo of Jesus Christ was planted in the womb of Mary by aliens using advanced technologies. Certain other people argue that Mary was inseminated with an alien sperm, and Jesus is actually an alien-human hybrid who possessed magical capabilities far beyond those of mortal men, Tim.
Whoa.
A visitor from a far-off planet.
Hmm.
The ufologist claims that the resurrection of Jesus Christ is an irrefutable proof that substantiates the alien origin. Downing believes that Jesus Christ's ascension from the earth is actually the return to his distant alien home planet. I mean, he was beamed up. A few months ago, Giorgio Tsoukalos, the television host known for presenting Ancient Aliens and History Channel, had claimed that humans have misunderstood alien visitors as gods. Tsoukalos made these remarks while talking about the origin of religion in the earth at the annual Contact in the Desert UFO conference in Indiana Wells, California last year. As per Tsoukalos, ancient humans misrepresented alien visitors as deities, and their advanced technology was interpreted as divine power. It should also be noted that several conspiracy theorists in the past had claimed the ancient gods, especially in the Hindu and Greek mythology, are actually interstellar aliens from deep space, Tim.
Okay,
so it turns out, good old Jesus, Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeshua?
Yeah, but yeah.
Joshua, as some claim his real name would be, might be an alien.
But as they're crucifying the alien, why didn't they just come with the mothership and take him off the cross?
Yeah, they got caught up on the turnpike, Tim. There was a lot of lot of traffic on the old celestial spaghetti junction.
I see, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
I heard they had flat part of the ride, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I go, well, we learned our lesson. Next time we leave 15 minutes earlier, kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a theory. It's a theory. It's just a working theory. Not Giorgio Tsoukalos' theory, but mine.
I see. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What else you got for me, Tim? Where are we going next?
Well, we're headed off to Wales. Oh, boy. Yeah.
What?
The place where they don't know how to write English and pronounce names. Yeah.
Tim, I think they are English, aren't they?
No.
Or are they Welsh? That's Welsh.
They're Welsh, yeah. Yeah, we'll have some fun with some names.
Why is
here.
It Welsh if you're from Wales? Wouldn't you be Walsh?
You should be. You should be Walish.
Yes, yeah. Walish.
You should be Walish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're a Canadian, you should be from Canada.
That's right. You should be from Canada.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. It's time for Fun with Names, kids, in this segment of paranormal, or actually supernatural news. A paranormal investigator claims to have photographed the 17th century ghost of James I at a haunted house. Paul Rowland claims he spotted a medieval politician, Sir John Trevor, at a manor in Wrexham, Wales. I'm going to skip over a few words here, Dave, if you don't mind. A paranormal investigator claims to have photographed the 17th century ghost of James I. Is it Courtier? Sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Paul, we go way back.
Yeah. Paul Rowland.
Jimmy Court.
Yeah, you and Jimmy Court. Jimmy the First Courtier. Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Paul Rowland claims he spotted medieval politician Sir John Trevor at the... I'm just going to say it's the plastic manor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plastic Manor. Yeah.
Yeah. They're in Wrexham, Wales. And says, I know I'm just going to piss people off there. And says he has picture evidence. The spooky image appears to show the outline of a man's face floating above a candle. Mr. Rowland, who has been investigating the Jacobean Manor for 16 years, believes this, the ghost is Sir John, who built it in 1610.
That's an interesting picture.
Yeah, it is. Quite.
That does look like a face.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. He said, it really surprised me when I saw the picture. I took the pictures around a week ago and have only just got around to looking at them now. It's the clearest photo I've ever taken at plastic. I'm calling it that. You can email me. The photo was captured with my specialist lighting in the Regency bedroom, which is the room associated with Sir John Trevor. I speculate that it is him, as I believe I was calling it out to him at the time. Sir John was an MP between 1592 and 1614 before his death in 1630, and according to Mr. Rowland, is very unfriendly. Visitors to that plastic place report hearing laughing voices and footsteps and seeing objects move, and some experience temperature changes and rapid mood swings. On the night, there were three of us in that area of the house, a woman called Liz and a man called Malcolm. Liz was spiritually aware and said she sensed an unfriendly figure. So when I saw the photo, I feel like it really gives more credibility to what Liz was feeling. I'm pretty sold that the picture was paranormal, as if you look at the positioning of it, the head is at the correct height and the body would have been going through the table or mirror. If it was a reflection of someone, it would have been stood on the bed and there was absolutely nobody on the bed or to the side of it, he went on to say. So there you go.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. It is. It's a cool picture. That's definitely one of the more unique photos. I see exactly what he's looking at.
Sure. Now, it could be, well, in all fairness, it could be Plaztag. It could be Plaztag. It could be, you know, Plaztag. Could be Plaztag. Okay. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim, you want a chance to go on a ghost hunt in Castlegate Shopping Center?
Please.
Built on the grounds of Norman Castle?
Mm-hmm.
The quest is on to find brave souls prepared to spend the night in a reportedly haunted shopping center. That just doesn't have an evil ring to it, Tim.
Haunted Gap does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of a portal when it's a gap?
I think so.
Over the years, there's been a number of cases of paranormal activity in the Castlegate Shopping Center in Stockton. Several ghosts have reportedly been seen, heard, and felt, with strange music and sounds noted during the middle of the night by security officers. So it's like you and I were security officers, mall cops, right, Tim? We're walking around, all of a sudden, from somewhere off in the distance, we hear, I like big butts and I cannot lie. You are the ghost, can't deny. When a spirit walks in with an itty bitty wench and a round thing in your face, you get sprung. You're like, what?
Huh?
Hello? What's this? Sir Tim of the mall. Did you also hear the voice call out from the darkness?
That was my nickname in high school, Sir Tim of the mall.
Now, for the first time since the 1970s, disused and abandoned areas are going to be open to the public for an exclusive ghost tour charity event in aid of One Great Day, supporting Great Ormond Street and Middlesbrough and Teesside Philanthropic Foundation. That was a word I understood how to say and couldn't say it.
Mm-hmm.
Philanthropic. Karen Eve, the center manager, said, Castlegate stands on the grounds of a Norman castle belonging to Prince Bishops of Durham, dating from the 12th century. It's made up of two buildings, Walker House, which is currently in use, and the abandoned Stevenson House, where the majority of the terrifying tales have been witnessed. I don't know why Karen Eve has such a dark and foreboding voice, Tim.
I have no idea. Maybe too many cigarettes?
The building has been frozen in time since it was deserted in the late 70s. While most of the furniture has been removed, evidence of a once busy workplace is still seen all over. Guests of the ghost tour will be able to visit after hours and take a guided tour of the disused areas, which some staff are even too scared to enter. It was supposed to be thunder.
Oh, that's what that was.
Yeah, I was going for thunder and laughter.
You got
marketing
the laughter
manager Chantel. What?
You got the laughter part perfect.
Yeah. Oh. Marketing manager Chantel Taylor said the building is incredibly eerie, and the few people who have already had access all have very creepy stories to tell. The event has been designed to appeal to not only those who are interested in the paranormal, but those with an interest of local history. I guess that part's not scary. Ghost tours take place on Wednesday, June 19th and Thursday, the 20th, from 6:30 p.m. through the late night. Tickets start at just £12.50, quid, Tim. I don't know if I said that right. Is cents quid?
I don't get out of the house, Dave. I have no idea.
That's true. Those laws don't allow you to visit foreign countries.
Yeah, I'm stuck here.
Yeah.
Studio.
A no-fly out of country list. All right, so that's going on. If you want, Tim, you can go check out a haunted shopping mall. It's exciting. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, what else you got for me?
Well, Dave, we move to the world of Hollyweird, where Lily Collins says she was visited by the ghosts of Ted Bundy's victims while playing his girlfriend in the Netflix movie. Extremely wicked.
Really?
Yeah. Extremely wicked, shockingly evil and vile actress Lily Collins said the ghosts of some of Ted Bundy's victims appeared to her as apparitions after signing on to play Bundy's ex-girlfriend Liz Klepfer in the Netflix film. Collins talked about the eerie continuous events in the interview with The Guardian on Friday. She said, "I would go downstairs and have a cup of tea and try to figure out why I'd woken up again," she said of her time preparing for the role of Klepfer. "I started being woken up by flashes of images like the aftermath of a struggle." Collins came to realize that these were images sent to her by Bundy's deceased victims. For most, that realization may come as a terrifying shock, but to Collins, it was a confirmation that her role was important. "I didn't feel scared. I felt supported," she explained. "I felt like people were saying, we're here listening. We're here to support. Thank you for telling the story." What Collins learned through research was the time the ghost appeared to her was during the witching hour each night. The actor cited 3:05 as the time that she'd wake up on these occasions, which is one of the first minutes of the believed haunted time. "I discovered that 3 a.m. is the time that when the veil between the realms is the thinnest and one can be visited," Collins explained of the time. According to paranormal research, Collins is right, it says in this article. The term the witching hour comes from the idea that the hour is when magic or a witch's power are the strongest. According to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the time has histories of being known for paranormal activity, among others, or other strengths in categories like black magic that makes it easy for humans to have otherwise abnormal experiences. The concept of the witching hour is considered folklore but has similarities in hundreds of different cultures. To prepare for her role in Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile, Collins spent time with Klepfer in real life. She was able to look through photo albums of Klepfer and Bundy, collected from the 7 years they lived together, and even read aloud from Bundy's letters sent to Klepfer from prison, the film's director Joe Berlinger told that to Newsweek. So there you go.
Have you seen the documentary or that film yet? It's not a documentary. It's a film. Have you seen it?
I have not, no.
I'm seeing mixed things. First of all, I hear Zac Efron is amazing as Ted Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of a different version of his story. This is more to do with the trials and this woman coming to terms that this man she's loved and been with for 7 years is actually a killer. So I was just curious what your thoughts were on it. I have it downloaded to my phone.
Yep.
And I plan on watching it soon. I did it legally through Netflix, folks. I'm a member. So I plan on doing that. I plan on watching that is what I plan on doing.
It's one of those things that intrigues me. And I know it's one of those things I do want to get around to watching. I just haven't yet. I'll put it to you this way. Zac Efron is one of those actors where when I see him in a film, I go, you know, and I keep hearing about the critical acclaim of how good of a job he did, but he, I don't know. There's just something about him that isn't quite,
Well, it's going to really break your back when they make him the new Wolverine.
Oh, God, don't say that, please.
Since we're already in Hollywood, Tim, let's go to the producers of Netflix El Chapo. Shudder has now acquired Dead Detectives, described as an irreverent, laugh-out-loud blend of Ghostbusters, Shaun of the Dead, and Peter Jackson's The Frighteners. That's what Screen Daily first reported. The film tells of a team of hapless reality TV ghost hunters who encounter actual paranormal activity while filming in the most haunted mansion in Mexico. In this hilarious take on the paranormal, TV's Dead Detectives are dispatched to Mexico's most haunted mansion and are charged with the task of bringing real scares and big ratings or face cancellation. With a new no-nonsense producer at the helm and a truckload of special effects at the ready, the team are determined to manufacture an excess of thrills and chills for a supernatural spectacular. However, when the true dark secrets of the mansion begin to reveal themselves, the hapless presenters quickly discover that the house is no hoax. With zero ghost hunting skills, or really applicable skills, the team has to figure out how to bust the ghosts, deliver the episode of a lifetime, and escape the house with both their lives and their dignity. The Tony West-directed film stars Martha Higgerid, You're the Worst, Chris Greer, and Tina Ivliv, Tim. All three amazing people I don't know. The film received its world premiere at Sitges last year and will also screen at Seattle International Film Festival and Fantasboa International Fantastic Film Festival in the Brazil, Tim.
Oh, the Brazil.
Yes. Right down there in the Brazil. So that's that. That's that story for Hollywood. I don't know if that excites you or not.
Oh, sure.
But it's another new show.
Uh-huh.
You know what does excite me, Tim?
What's that?
You know what's great about credit cards, Tim?
What's that?
Oh, the smell of a brand new credit card. Oh, is there anything better? Opening up that envelope, getting that new credit card. Oh, the possibilities, Tim. Oh, the possibilities. The freedom that they give you to do things in life that we really want. You know, sometimes we just need to do. How about dinner out? No problem, Tim. Here's my card. Oh, new tires for the car? I got it, Tim. Here's my card. But you know what's not so great? Are those high interest rates. Most people just accept the high interest rates with credit cards because it's kind of a necessary evil. At least that's what we tell ourselves. And what are we going to do? Well, here's what we can do. If you have good credit, you can get a low fixed rate credit card consolidation loan from LightStream and pay off those credit card balances. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and you could get your money as soon as the day you apply. The average credit card company charges over 19% APR, but with LightStream, you can get a fixed rate as low as 5.95% APR with autopay. Now, you can pay off high-interest credit cards and save money with a much lower rate. Want an even lower interest rate? Of course you do. Apply today at lightstream.com/darkness and get an additional interest rate discount. That's lightstream.com/darkness for an additional discount. LIGHTSTREAM.com/darkness. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/darkness for more information. All right, where are we off to now, Tim?
Well, Dave, in an Audio Daily Double, this story is absolutely bizarre. We go to Lake Charles, Louisiana, and this has to do with a paranormal cirque, so to speak, that's drumming up a whole lot of interest and actually some trouble on social media. You got to hear it to believe it.
Have you heard of the paranormal cirque? It's a circus that's just rolled into Lake Charles this week, and some in the community are not too happy about it. Many people are voicing their concerns on social media, saying they believe the controversial circus is, in their words, satanic. And after seeing the comments online, the owner of the paranormal cirque is speaking out too, hoping to clear any confusion surrounding his show.
I immediately knew that this was not God's will. This is of Satan. Evil dwells with activities that invite him.
But when you actually see the show and you see our video, you can see then the adults having a great time. Nobody here eating children or voodoo stuff. I'm a Catholic. I go to church. I try to go every Sunday.
The show is geared toward adults. They don't allow anyone under 13 and require adult supervision for those 13 to 17. Paranormal Cirque is advertising on Facebook that it will be here in Alexandria May 9th through the 12th over at the Alexandria Mall.
That's great. This is of Satan, Tim. This is of Satan.
What gets,
I like his answer.
I was going to say,
nobody eating children here.
What gets me is that guy doesn't even quite know when church is, but he kind of got to the point that it was Sunday. So he eventually figured it out, but, you know, he's a good pastor.
I try to go to church every Sunday.
Sunday? Yeah, Sunday, I believe, is when the church is, I'm sure.
But I love the way he's selling the show. Hey, nobody's eating children.
Nobody's
come eating. On down. That's your new tagline. Hey, come on down. Nobody's eating children. I don't know. So bizarre. So bizarre. All right. That was a good one. What a weird story. People are weird, Tim.
A little bit.
Speaking of weird people, let's go inside the haunted doll market of eBay and Etsy.
Sure.
Haunted doll sellers and collectors say buyers should beware, Tim. Of course you should beware. Do we really have to warn people when you're buying a haunted doll? 30 years ago, the world was introduced to a 29-inch tall doll in overalls named Chucky, with eyes bluer than a White Walker's hair, more fiery than Ed Sheeran's, and a smattering of freckles a la Emma Stone. He looked like the perfect childhood buddy, Tim.
Aww.
Unfortunately, Chucky, that little tiny antagonist of the 1988 movie Child's Play, was possessed by a serial killer with a knack for slaughtering people with butcher knives, yo-yo strings, and anything else he could find around the house. Well, today, almost everyone knows that if a wild-eyed doll asks, want to play? The only acceptable response is to run as fast and as far as you can. I don't think that's true. First, you kick it in the head and just start stomping on it. Why doesn't anybody ever just do that?
Too easy, Dave. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Then, Tim, there are people like Kevin Kane, a paranormal investigator in Alabama who owns hundreds of haunted dolls and other items. I lost count a long time ago, he says. While Kane may be an especially prolific collector, he's far from the only one. In fact, there is a thriving marketplace for haunted dolls on the internet. Well, I think I know how to clear out my garage now, Tim. According to Kane, things really took off after the Annabelle doll appeared in The Conjuring, followed by a solo film, Annabelle Creation. Annabelle, a vintage porcelain doll with smeared lipstick, a cracked pupil, and claw marks on her face, is possessed by a demonic spirit that enjoys ruthlessly murdering people. That she's based on a real-life haunted Raggedy Ann doll adds to the intrigue. With the next installment of the Conjuring series, Annabelle Comes Home, and a reboot of Child's Play, both hitting theaters this June, there's sure to be a new wave of people curious about haunted dolls and perhaps even eager to get their hands on one. Gone are the days when you'd have to trek to a shady part of town, down a darkened alley, and into a questionable-looking antique shop to get your haunted doll fix. Although if you're ever in New Orleans, Bloody Mary's Haunted Museum and Spirit Shop, that's definitely worth a visit, Tim.
Oh, yes.
Etsy and eBay now list thousands of dolls purportedly inhabited by everything from evil witches to judgmental spirits that might call you fat to young children and even fairy spirits. Oh, yeah, like I need a doll to tell me I'm fat. What kind of doll is that? Most haunted dolls sell for around $50 plus shipping. Oh, man, I got like $5,000-$6,000 worth of dolls in my garage, Tim.
Oh.
But the most highly prized ones are priced well into the four figures. Huh? There's a formula for how each one is sold. Each listing contains a detailed overview of the spirit's life story, details of said spirit's death, and a description of their personality. Dolls are labeled active or highly active if paranormal phenomena are said to occur frequently in their vicinity. Some are advertised as being able to move objects, make noises,
huh?
Or communicate via telepathy or the Ouija board, Tim. while others are meant to act as creative muses, play matchmaker by revealing potential lovers and dreams, or emit positive energy. Cat blowers, that's an unfortunate name, cat blowers, whose Etsy shop... I guess Puppy Fondler was not a name that was available that day.
No.
Cat Blowers, whose Etsy shop, Fugitive Cat Creations, specializes in haunted dolls, says best sellers tend to be inhabited by female spirits that have some sort of empowerment angle. We have a lot of goddess-type spirits of women who have survived terrible situations and thrived. She also sees high demand for witches around Halloween and leprechauns near St. Patrick's Day. So... what she did is she figured if she taps into the market, Tim, to sell dolls that are empowered or imbued by some kind of female spirit mm-hmm. of empowerment, that that's good. How empowered are they if they're tethered to a doll? I'm not trying to belittle them, Tim.
Right.
But I can't guess that that's highly empowering that you're stuck in a Betsy Wetsy. While there are con artists, no kidding, looking to take advantage of uneducated buyers, many haunted item purveyors hold themselves to what they see as high ethical and scientific standards. What? It costs us a fortune in tools, says Blowers. Whenever she acquires a new doll, Blowers and her husband put it through an intense investigation that lasts 1 to 3 months. First, the doll is separated from any other paranormal objects in the house. Goes into quarantine, Tim. Then it's examined with a K2 EMF meter, a device used by paranormal investigators to detect electromagnetic energy for a period of 3 to 5 days. Blowers then places the doll in a sound box, basically a foam box is what it is, Tim, with a voice-activated recorder to see if she can hear any words or phrases. We've heard music, which is really weird, she tells us. Finally, they conduct lucid dreaming sessions, which involve sleeping next to the doll alongside a piece of amethyst, which is supposed to be a potent lucid dreaming crystal, to see if they have any weird dreams. Blowers typically ends up with a 15-page report by the end of each investigation. Unlike the horror films, real-life haunted dolls aren't necessarily bloodthirsty beings with a penchant for sharp objects. Not everything is evil, says Kane. Yes, there are demons, and Annabelle is an example, number one of that, but also good spirits. If a ghost can haunt a house or a building or a ship, why can't they just hang around an item once owned or reminds them of something in their past? He theorizes that spirits like to hang around dolls and other toys because of their familiarity and strong emotional connection. However, this doesn't mean buyers shouldn't beware. Kane routinely refuses people who email begging to purchase one of his haunted dolls. I tell them it's not for everybody. Because well, you won't sell them, you jerk. Of course it's not for everybody. You don't know what you're asking for, he says. These dolls aren't for entertainment or fun. These are actual haunted items with spirits attached who want to be respected. Then you have those who, if you're not careful, are demonic and ready to tear into your soul. He's so caring, yet he doesn't do anything to help clear the spirits and set them free of their binding. Maybe he does, just don't know about it. He describes an episode where a young woman bought a doll online that was supposed to be haunted by a kind, positive spirit, but she ended up with something dark and malevolent. After a string of strange occurrences culminating in feeling tiny hands around her neck one night, she contacted Kane and shipped the doll off to him. Luckily, he knew how to bind the demonic spirit, ultimately sealing the doll in a box coated in holy water and storing it on the highest shelf in his home, where it still remains. Because we know demonic dolls are afraid of heights, Tim.
No, of course, yeah.
Demons aside, selling haunted dolls online comes with some technical challenges. For one thing, eBay isn't too keen on the whole concept and has a policy that specifically forbids the selling of souls. According to a statement from the company back in 2000, eBay does not allow the auctioning of human souls for the following reasons. If the soul does not exist, eBay could not allow the auctioning of the soul because there would be nothing to sell. However, if the soul does exist, then in accordance with eBay's policy on human parts and remains, we would not allow the auctioning of human souls. So in 2012, eBay further banned metaphysical items, including spells, hexes, potions, and magical services. Some sellers found creative workarounds, including winking claims that their dolls are for entertainment purposes only or sold as is. They also often state there's no guarantee of paranormal activity and indemnify themselves from the consequences of anything that does or doesn't happen. Others, deterred by eBay's crackdown, simply packed up and moved on to Etsy, who apparently doesn't care if you sell body parts and human souls, Tim.
I guess not.
The haunted doll market certainly isn't disappearing anytime soon. Kane expects there'll be a huge surge in demand this summer, thanks to Annabelle and Chucky's big screen appearances. Something he's not particularly thrilled about for anyone considering a haunted doll. He has one message. Be careful what you buy. It may be phony, or worse yet, it may be something demonic. Sorry.
No, you're fine. You're good.
Yeah. So maybe what I should do, you know what, Tim, if there's going to be this resurgence of popularity in haunted dolls.
Yeah.
Maybe what I'll do is I will break out all of my haunted dolls and I should put up a haunted darkness web page on Etsy. What do you think on this? And people email me. Let me know your thoughts on this, honestly. And how about if I donate 75% of everything I get off the sale of these dolls to like the juvenile diabetes fund?
That's or, a good idea.
And here's what I would do. I'll sell all the dolls. You guys can see the tally as it goes. And then I will show you the photograph of the check written to the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. And I will even go to the local place by me that the Juvenile Diabetes Foundation and make the presentation on video so that they have the check. What do you think? Should I do something like that?
I like that idea. Yeah.
That way I can clear the garage of demonic dolls, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
I can make money for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Fund.
Mm-hmm.
But Dave, why not 100%? Well, because I do have some things I have to pay for. So I want to be able to cover my nuts, Tim. Cover the nut of the cost of everything.
Yeah.
And cover my nuts because really nobody wants to see them.
Yeah. Well, there's that. Yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more to share with you. But before we go, 60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, or do a few sit-ups, or even just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Another few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need. So there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. We'll be back with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
If you like our show, you're going to love Offbeat with Ricky Anderson and Mira Harris on Podcast One. The head of A&R for the Kanye West-founded label Good Music and the music executive turned activist as they welcome Apple executive and world-famous DJ Zane Lowe. Download new episodes of Offbeat with Ricky Anderson and Mira Harris every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the program. This is Beyond the Darkness, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave. That's Tim. Tim, where are we starting next in supernatural news?
Well, Dave, we're going right to the Ministry of Defense, who has been urged to reopen the X-Files and take UFO sightings seriously. Ooh, I didn't know they weren't taking it seriously, to be honest with you. The British Ministry of Defense has been urged to adopt a similar approach so servicemen and women feel able to come forward with their own mysterious observations. The U.S. Navy recently admitted that UFOs have been spotted near military facilities as it released new guidelines to ensure sightings of unexplained aerial phenomena and they're reported and recorded properly. Nick Pope, former head of the MOD's UFO investigation desk, has drawn up a document setting out how the UK should respond to anomalous events observed in the sky. The British writer and investigator called for UFO sightings to be taken seriously and urged his former employer to implement a policy similar to the U.S. Navy's guidelines. Officials closed Britain's X-Files in 2009, and they have not been opened since. Pope sent a copy of his guidelines to the Metro paper and said he'd be open to teaming up with the MOD once again to investigate UFOs. He said, I strongly support the U.S. Navy's policy, which is a sensible response to the defense, national security, and air safety issues raised by the phenomenon, whatever its true nature. I hope the U.S. policy initiative will lead the U.K. following suit. It's time either to reopen the MOD's UFO project or put some new reporting arrangements in place. To many people, the acronym UFO conjures images of flying saucers and little green men, but there is growing evidence suggesting that at least some reports of strange aircraft in the sky may be credible, although the objects are more likely to be experimental spy planes than alien exploration craft. In the U.S., details of a secret research drive called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, or AATIP, have slowly leaked into the public domain over the past 2 years, as well as investigating advanced...
Is that just the tip?
It is just the tip, Dave, and it's a AATIP. It's
sounds fancier.
As well as investigating advanced technology like wormholes, anti-gravity, and laser weapons, the project probed unexplained aerial phenomena, including observations of aircraft traveling at extreme speeds. The Navy also admitted it received a number of reports of unidentified aircraft traveling into protected airspace over military ranges, which means land owned by the American Armed Forces. Defense chiefs became so concerned about the sightings that they ordered the development of a new process to report and record mysterious sightings of unauthorized and unidentified aircraft. However, the guidelines are not going to be released to the public. I understand why the U.S. Navy has refused to release their policy guidelines to the public, but for those who want to know, I suspect my version is broadly similar to theirs, Pope added. And there you go. It has a list of his guidelines in the article, but they're pretty broad and pretty long. But
Tim, we don't say broad anymore. We refer to them as ladies.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize for that. I'm kind of crude in my ways, but there you go.
A ghost has been spotted by paranormal investigators at Edinburgh's Mary King's Close, Tim. For more than 300 years, its brutal history has been intertwined with reports of the unexplained. And now paranormal investigators have released new images purportedly showing a host of ghostly apparitions inside one of the country's most haunted locations. Claims of spectral sightings at Edinburgh's Mary King's Close have stretched back as far as 1685, with thousands flocking to the narrow labyrinth in the hope of experiencing an eerie encounter. But one group of ghost hunters believe they met a number of spirits during an overnight exploration of the close. The Durham-based Spectre Detectors claim to have happened upon at least 30 different phantoms while they wandered the ancient streets. One image released by the group claims to show a man in a cap hiding in the closest plague room, while another apparently shows a woman in a bonnet. Nothing else, Tim, just a man wearing a hat and a woman wearing a bonnet. They're completely starkers otherwise.
Oh, my.
That's not true.
Oh.
The team who traveled up from the Northeast to investigate the Close have visited hundreds of haunted locations across the country since 2011. Elaine Kelly, who has written several books about her ghost hunting experiences, said it was extremely rare to get such a clear picture of any spirit, adding they heard various voices during their visit. Elaine, 44, added, "We had a number of mediums in our party, and they were communicating with about 30 different voices. It was a remarkable evening. We started in Andrew Chesney's house. I think we got a few different contacts in there, and even in the cafe area. I think we got a man talking about hangings." I think she just overheard somebody saying how well hung he was, Tim, and they think that I could be wrong. I don't know. It's very rare to get that much contact on just one visit, so it was extremely surprising. Elaine continued, "I think even the staff were a bit surprised. Obviously, we had guides with us, but my friend showed them the image of the man in the cap on the actual camera, and they were amazed. The Close, which opened as a tourist attraction back in '03, Tim, was originally created by a maze of tenement blocks housing a variety of different social classes in the 17th century. However, it gained infamy for its role in becoming a breeding ground for the plague, when thousands of black rats carrying fleas infected with the illness killed a huge section of the population in the mid-1600s. Many of the apparitions seen in the Close since have been reported to be plague victims. The far end of the Close was demolished to make way for Cockburn Street in 1853, almost a century after the current site was paved over to form the foundations of the Royal Exchange Building. Paul Nixon, general manager of the real Mary King's Close, commented, "With world-renowned tales of ghost sightings dating back to 1685, this recent image has certainly sparked some debate in the office." He added, "Although we welcome paranormal investigators from across the UK to explore the Close after dark, we're proud of our real history and of telling the real stories of the people who once would have lived, worked, and died on the Close." I think he's taking a shot over their bow with, "We like the real stories, the real history."
Most definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's all I got. What have you got?
It turns out, Dave, that Thomas Jefferson once reported claims of a UFO sighting in Baton Rouge. It's true. File this under obscure presidential trivia. On the night of April 5th, 1800, William Dunbar, a 50-year-old plantation owner and Natchez resident, who eventually achieved some notoriety for his scientific discoveries and his work as an explorer, saw something he couldn't explain floating in the night sky above Baton Rouge, Louisiana, an object that he estimated to be the size of a large house. Baton Rouge, which was, what's that? Not Baton Rouge itself to be floating.
No, I said,
over.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Baton Rouge, which was first established as a French fort in 1721, was still a small town, home to fewer than 2,000 people. Spain had just seceded from the Louisiana Territory back to France. The historic neighborhoods of Spanish Town and Beauregard Town were still vacant land. It would take another half century before the town became the state capital of Louisiana, and another 69 years before the school, now known as Louisiana State University, officially relocated from Pineville.
You said 69.
See, I was trying to be the better of the two here and not point that out.
I know, but I took the run.
Okay, good. Dunbar, a native of Scotland and a member of the unfortunately named House of Doofus, was among...
I'm sorry, the House of what?
Doofus. Yeah, House Whoa. Of Doofus. Was, among other things, somewhat of an amateur astronomer, and as luck would have it, only a year before that April night in Baton Rouge, or Baton Rouge, if he was from Scotland. He had been
Baton Rouge.
He had been introduced to one of the most famous men in the world, the author of the Declaration of Independence, among other things, Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson at the time was the Vice President of the United States, an unwanted consolation prize for finishing second to John Adams in a race to replace George Washington. Of course, throughout his life, Thomas Jefferson collected nearly as many titles as his pen pal, King George, and in April of 1800, he also just so happened to be serving as the president of the American Philosophical Society, which meant practically every morsel of gossip he shared with the organization's members, ended up making their newsletter. On page 25 of the sixth volume of Transactions of the American Philosophical Society, the story Dunbar shared with Jefferson about what he saw in Baton Rouge is faithfully retold under the title Description of a Singular Phenomenon Seen at Baton Rouge by William Dunbar, Esquire, communicated by Thomas Jefferson, President APS. It reads in full, a phenomenon was seen to pass Baton Rouge on the night of the 5th of April, 1800, of which the following is best description I have been able to obtain. It says, quote, it was first seen in the southwest and moved so rapidly, passing over the heads of the spectators, as to disappear in the northeast in about a quarter of a minute. It appeared to be the size of a large house, 70 or 80 feet long, and of a form nearly resembling figure 5 in plate 4. It appeared to be about 200 yards above the surface of the earth, wholly luminous, but not emitting sparks, of a color resembling the sun near the horizon in a cold, frosty evening, which may be called a crimson red, when passing right over the heads of spectators. The light on the surface of the earth was a little short of the effect of sunbeams, though at the same time looking another way. The stars were visible, which appears to be a confirmation of the opinion formed of its moderate elevation. In passing, a considerable degree of heat was felt, but no electric sensation. Immediately after it disappeared in the northeast, a violent rushing noise was heard, as if the phenomenon was bearing down the forest before it. And in a few seconds, a tremendous crash was heard, similar to that of the largest piece of ordnance, causing a very sensible earthquake. I have been informed that the search has been made in the place where the burning body fell, and that a considerable portion of the surface of the earth was found broken up, and every vegetable body burned or greatly scorched. I have not yet received answers to a number of queries I have sent on, which may perhaps bring to light more particulars. William Dunbar quickly became one of Jefferson's favorite sources, and by all accounts, the two remained friends until Dunbar's death in 1810. Indeed, while Jefferson's impact on Louisiana history is difficult to rival, Dunbar also earns a legitimate footnote. In late 1804, Thomas Jefferson, now president, asked Dunbar and George Hunter to lead an expedition that claimed to trace the Arkansas and Red Rivers to their sources. The president wanted to know as much as he could about the real estate he had just purchased, but after hearing reports about a violent group of Osage Indians stationed along their planned routes, Dunbar and Hunter ultimately had to dramatically scale back their ambitious plans, which Kelby Ouchley of 64 Parishes described as comparable in scope to the Lewis and Clark expedition. Instead, the two men explored the, I believe it's Ouachita River, which they never quite figured out how to correctly spell, and which unfortunately turned up no additional evidence of extraterrestrial life. I feel for those guys. There you go.
We're going to Malaysia, Tim. All right. I hope you're dressed for the occasion.
I hope so, too.
A letter informing a temporary closure of a clinic in Hulu, Selangor, went viral recently after it cited mysterious incidences that traumatized both nurses and patients at the facility as the cause of closure. Reported on the Wujud Facebook page, a letter dated 28 March of 2019 informing the temporary closure of the Klinik Desa Gesir Tengah, Hulu, Selangor, was posted, with the page administrator seeking further clarification on the matter. The letter writes, Klinik Desa Gesir Tengah has been experiencing a series of paranormal activities since 2007, which disrupts service and disturbs those seeking treatment at the facility. We have made efforts to stop the disturbances, but they continue to happen. The district medical officer who wrote the letter also included a chronology of mystical events that took place at their clinic. Though the original post did not include the said chronology, a Nietzschean commenting on the post shared the attachment outlining the chronology of incidents taking place at the clinic. The attachment outlined events happening from 2007 to 2012. Unfortunately, I'm looking at it, Tim, but it's all written in Malaysian.
Oh.
And I skipped that day in geography class, so I did not learn the language of Malaysia.
Oh, no.
Indonesianism. Oh. Is it Malaysian idealism?
I'm not familiar with native Malaysia, so I wouldn't know.
In 2007, a community nurse, Jurawat Masakarat, asked to be transferred after reporting disturbances by a black entity. In 2009, when community nurse N arrived at the facility, there were no disturbances to be reported. But as the months went by, she began experiencing weird noises and smells. Really, at a hospital clinic.
No.
Weird noises and smells, you say?
Never.
She then saw an entity around the facility. Since then, community nurse N is continuously disturbed by the entity that takes the form of an elderly woman, her colleague, and a black entity. The disturbance experienced by community nurse N continued in 2012 to a point that she herself became a victim of possession by the black and evil entity. Though her series of possession and disturbances ended after being transferred to a different clinic, for the clinic, it was only the beginning. On a daily basis, yellowish grains of rice are found on the floors of the premise and the toilets, despite efforts to clean up. Yeah, you heard that right, Tim.
Yeah.
Yellowish rice.
Yeah.
Not yellowish rice, Tim!
No.
Yellowish. Black rice would seem evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yellowish rice just seems like rice.
Yeah.
Personnel continue to witness the existence of a black entity.
Hmm.
An elderly female and a long-haired woman at the clinic. Children frequenting the clinic also witness the existence of an elderly woman waving and calling to them.
Hello.
Thank you, Mrs. Doubtfire. Fast forward to 2019, the report states that the disturbances have become more frequent. Let's play that actual audio clip again.
Hello.
Wow. It's chilling.
Yeah.
A TB patient came by to take his medication. Upon taking his medicine, he asked nurses at the clinic to leave the clinic as he witnessed the existence of an entity in that clinic. In an attempt to stop future disturbances, a series of cleansing activities were carried out by employees of the clinic and the surrounding community, which also includes the removal of the previously mentioned statue. Though I don't remember the statue being mentioned. Did I mention a statue?
I don't think so.
No. Though the post offers no insight about the current progress of the Klinik Dessa, or clinic, I think is what it's supposed to be. We sincerely hope that the root cause of the disturbances are identified to ensure that the clinic can resume operation, or at least that the premise can be safe from those disturbances. Huh. It's weird. Close down a clinic. That's something. When you close down an entire clinic, not because of lack of funding, but because of too many phantoms, Tim.
That is disturbing.
All right. We're coming into the last couple of news stories. Where are you taking me next, sir?
Going to Liberty, North Carolina, where a man says it was No, that's not North Carolina. Although there was a royal baby born this week.
Oh, well, good. Isn't that Archie? Is that his name?
Yeah, yeah, from the comic books, evidently.
They could have gone with Jughead, but Prince Jughead just didn't have the same ring.
Yeah, it's not very regal, yeah. A Liberty man says he was, he did capture a UFO on Facebook Live. He claims it was a spiritual experience. Daniel Patterson says he's seen multiple UFOs, but this is the first he's recorded. Are we alone in this universe, or is there extraterrestrial activity that we just aren't aware of? If you ask Daniel Patterson of Liberty, now I've got the Liberty Insurance jingle in my head. Liberty, 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 Liberty. Sorry. If you ask Daniel Patterson...
Stop that. We can't charge for that.
Sorry. If you ask Daniel Patterson of Liberty, he'll tell you that there's more than meets the eye. On a January afternoon, he was chatting on Facebook Live video in the middle of the woods when he captured something unusual. He said, I didn't know if it was there. It was brought to my attention by someone else that it was on video and said, hey, Dan... did you see the UFO? And I said, no, according to Patterson. Patterson says he was talking about the universe when something whizzed by his head. I believe it's a tech that's not privy to our knowledge and maybe something from history that's actually been kept a secret, Patterson said. He says it was a spiritual experience. He said, for me, the Holy Spirit was present in those moments, according to Patterson. If you watch the video, something bright does fly by him. Suspected UFO sightings are pretty common in North Carolina. The National UFO Reporting Center lists the state as one of the top 10 states for reported sightings, close to 3,000 last year.
So it's moonshine. There's a lot of moonshine, Tim. I'm just going to put that out there.
In North Carolina?
You can judge for yourself. Yeah, moonshine, UFOs. Just, okay. You know, it's just possible, something to think about, Tim.
Okay.
Not here to judge.
Oh, all right. All right. The National UFO Reporting Center lists the state as one of the top 10 states for reported sightings, close to 3,000 a year. They aren't the only organization to track UFOs. The Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, does this as well. David Glidewell is a state director for the North Carolina chapter. On top of analyzing photos and videos, he also trains people to become field investigators. To be a good investigator, Glidewell says you have to be a skeptic, but also keep an open mind. He goes on to say you just can't dismiss everything you know. Dismissing it, that's probably the worst thing you can do, Glidewell went on to say. Glidewell says many times UFO sightings turn out to be lens flares, airplanes, birds, bugs, or drones, which investigators are trained to spot. But there's about 2 or 3% of the cases a year that there is
actually... How could he trust this guy? He didn't even mention it could have been Underdog.
Oh, that's a good point. Very good point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also about 2 to 3% of the cases a year that there's actually something that there's really strange. You look for those golden nuggets, Glidewell went to say. Oh, it could have been a golden nugget thrown at his head, Dave. It's a good point that Glidewell brings up. You learn to bite your tongue and smile and say, okay. And the truth is you actually have to respect that person's opinion, Glidewell went on to say. MUFON investigators have yet to classify what the Liberty sighting is. And even if they don't come to the same conclusion, Patterson and Glidewell both agree on one thing. Glidewell said, maybe there is some sort of extraterrestrial life out there that will make contact with us one day. Who knows? At the end of the day, we all question whether there is something out there.
I want to believe.
Well, then by all means, believe. You know?
The question, Tim, is what happened to a ghost hunter at South Derbyshire Hotel? That's the question, Tim.
Okay.
But before we get to the answer, I have another question, Tim.
Sure.
Do you have digestive troubles? How about weight gain? Low energy? Achy joints?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I had many questions, Tim.
Okay.
Many questions.
Right.
Well, if you're like Tim and I and you've been struggling with any of these, Dr. Stephen Gundry says you're not alone, and he knows the real cause. Dr. Gundry is one of the most famous and well-respected diet experts in the world, and he says what most of these problems are aren't about lack of exercise or even genetics. The real cause is leaky gut. Leaky gut happens when you eat certain foods that contain lectins, which are these tiny little particles that tear holes in your digestive tract. These particles then wreak havoc on your insides, causing poor digestion, fatigue, achy joints, and muscles, brain fog, and even worse, health issues. So what's the solution? Well, you just need to know a few foods to avoid. And Dr. Gundry has made a free video, Tim. I don't know if you heard that clearly, a free video.
Oh, yes.
Describing exactly what these things are. People who watch the video have reported more energy, smoother bowel movements, slimmer waistlines, and a stronger, healthier body. So if you finally want to tackle your leaky gut, just watch the free video at TotalRestore2.com. That's TotalRestore2. That's the number 2.com, TotalRestore2.com. Take back control of your life. Take back control of your stomach. Start feeling better, looking better, and having a better life. Go check out TotalRestore2.com. All right, Tim, back to the question at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Did this ghost hunter have a spooky experience in Derbyshire? Derbyshire. A paranormal team hunting for ghosts at an allegedly haunted South Derbyshire hotel has revealed how one of its investigators underwent a terrifying experience during the probe. Terrifying and probe. Those usually do go together.
They do.
The team from East Midlands Paranormal, a group based in Nottingham, led an investigation after reports of ghostly sightings at Newton Park Hotel in Newton Road, Newton, Solney. Some rooms are said to be haunted with strange sounds heard, as well as a white lady roaming the area, according to investigators. The team of 8 crew members and a further 4 guests concentrated mainly on one bedroom in the hotel, as well as the cellar, well known for being the scene of reports of ghostly sightings. Leader of the investigation, Sarah Goldsmith, described to Burton Live one of those terrifying experiences she had faced during the probe. She said later in the evening she had entered one bedroom alongside 2 other investigators. A small and ensuite bathroom was in the room, which most people have avoided for most of the night, as people had reported they felt like someone was standing behind them whenever they got too close to the room. Miss Goldsmith, 35, said nobody else would sit there, so I thought I would do it. I could see a little dog. I could see a lot of little movements around the room facing in. Sat there. I was feeling angry. I looked to the left and then to the right. You can see the video. I looked at the camera and apparently my face had changed. They were saying my face looked a lot younger. I started to feel really angry. I don't know why. I didn't know whether I shouldn't be there or if the others shouldn't be in the room. I felt agitated. They tried to make me stand up and I wouldn't. They did eventually get me up. They kept saying I looked younger. I don't look old anyway. Then I had a sharp pain in my ear at the same time. Then I came out of the trance. I had to go outside. It took me a long time to come around to what happened. A K2 meter, a device which detects electromagnetic fields, kept sounding alerts, which many claim can possibly indicate paranormal activity. Witnesses also claim to have seen orbs, Tim. Orbs, Tim!
Not orbs.
Orbs in the room, which they described as small floating white balls. Remember your experimental phase in college? Did you see a lot of small floating white balls, Tim? Some believe that's indicative of the presence of a ghost, or a half-naked ghost. When looking in the cellar of the hotel, they reportedly heard splashing. Splish, splash, he was taking a bath all upon a Saturday night. Come on, Tim. Rub-a-dub, he was dancing in the tub. No? All right, fine. Leave me out there singing by myself. See if I ever do scaryoke with you, you jerk. They reportedly heard splashing and movement in the water, which Miss Goldsmith from Arnold near Nottingham claimed sounded like children playing. The team are still looking through all the footage and images they captured during that investigation. Dave Aesthorpe from fellow group Burton Paranormal was also part of that investigation. Mr. Aesthorpe said he saw strange saws and morphing in the bedroom. He saw strange saws? Saws. He saw strange saws. I don't know what that means, Tim. So, like, they're just, like, hacksaws. And
he saw strange saws down by the seashore, Dave. Saws? It's a tongue twister.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Is that an English tongue twister?
It is, yes.
Yeah. From Nottingham?
Yeah, from Nottingham, yeah.
A spirit board was used in the cellar, an object that supposedly allows the paranormal to communicate. He said, through the night, a child was sensed under the table. Plenty more there to be experienced. Another member from Burton Paranormal stayed in one of the bedrooms. They were woken up several times due to stomping about. They also claimed to have seen a lady who was wearing funeral clothes. East Midlands Paranormal is aiming to return to the hotel later this year for a second stay. The hotel itself is steeped in history, dating back to the Norman Conquest. Hey, my name is Norman, and I call this hotel as my own. Is that the actual audio, Tim?
It is, yes. Yeah, we dug quite deep for that one, yeah.
You guys got any Pringles? When Newton, as the village was called at the time, came into the hands of the Saligny family, they held it from roughly 1120 to 1390, by which time the village came to be known as Newton Solney. Abraham Hoskins, an attorney and land speculator from Burton, built a house in the 1790s, which would go up would go on to become the core of Newton Park Hotel. He also went on to build Blandon Castle, which would become Blandon House, a school which remains in the village to this day. The Hoskins family were forced to sell the estate in 1876 to Lord Chesterfield, who let Newton Park to the William Worthington, a brewer from Burton. It was eventually acquired by the Ratcliffe family in 1879 following Worthington's death. When Peter Ratcliffe died in 1955, Newton Park was sold, with the building opening as a hotel 11 years later. So, Tim, just let me clarify one thing for you here.
Sure.
Uh-huh. So Abraham Hoskins, mm-hmm. an attorney and land speculator from Burton, built a house in the 1790s.
Okay.
So let's even round it to 1799. Okay. 1799.
Mm-hmm.
So 300 years ago.
Okay.
That would go on to become the core of the Newton Park Hotel. He also went on to build Blandon Castle, which would become Blandon House, a school which remains in the village to this day. Tim, in Minnesota, we built the Metrodome in what, like 1983? And then tore it down 40 years ago?
1982, yeah.
Oh, yeah, big difference. Yeah. But the point being, in the United States, Tim, we tear down buildings that are like 30 years old. This guy built places in 1790 that still stand today. We should be ashamed of ourselves here in America.
But we didn't make enough suites in the Metrodome, Dave, and it looked like a big toilet.
Oh, well, there's that big cotton ball.
Yeah.
Well, that's my rant for today. I'm all out of stories, Tim. I'm all out of stories. How about you? What have you got left for us?
Well, I got a story here about a presidential candidate, Democratic presidential candidate, that believes that UFOs exist. Dave, I'm stunned.
Yep. Okay.
I can't even talk. I'm so stunned.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. A 2020 presidential candidate for the Democratic Party, Andrew Yang, has confirmed interest in further investigation of the UFO phenomenon, which has re-entered the mainstream discourse in recent years, thanks to ongoing disclosures from Pentagon-funded investigations of mysterious aerial phenomena. I've used that.
I know you're baiting me. I know you're baiting me. You keep using it. I've been doing my best to break my OCD, Tim, and not go, phenomena.
I've used that word a lot.
Damn it.
See? I've used that word a lot today. Andrew Yang is his name. And he's actually been on the press tours lately. I saw him on TMZ a couple weeks ago, and he even came out on TMZ and said he believes in UFOs.
He came out?
Well, no, about UFOs.
Oh.
Yeah. For years, New Hampshire newspaper The Conway Daily Sun has pressed potential presidential candidates, barnstorming the early primary state for their stance on UFO disclosure. Yang's Q&A with the newspaper editorial staff and Conway locals primarily focused on Yang's proposed freedom dividend, which is a $1,000 monthly sum paid to American adults meant to redistribute massive corporate gains and ameliorate the effects of automation on the American workforce. But the Sun ended with two longstanding presidential primary traditions at the paper, autographing their office refrigerator, that's one, and asking about UFOs, that's the other. I'm very curious about UFOs, Yang said. I have a feeling they probably do exist. Most other candidates in the 2020 Democratic field haven't yet made their positions known on UFO disclosure. Democratic frontrunner Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, it says the only candidate to repeatedly poll ahead of Sanders, has yet to officially enter the race. He has now, since this article came out, answered more flippantly when the Sun asked him about UFOs during the 2016 presidential primaries. Bernie had no interest in the UFO question, Sun reporter Damon Steer told Beyond Presidential UFOs, a site tracking politicians' positions on UFO research. Commensurate with his tight focus on income inequality, Medicare for All and his College for All plan, Sanders has often dismissed weighing in on more esoteric topics, while Yang's feeling...
So Yang will talk about it, but Sanders refuses to pull a Yang and discuss it.
So to speak.
Am I getting that right? Sanders will not pull a Yang and talk about it?
Yes, he will not bat about with Yang, so to speak. Yeah. Well, Yang's feeling that there's substance to the UFO question places him closer to a pro-disclosure position than any other Democratic candidate, aligning him with ufologists, hobby skywatchers, and opponents of widespread Pentagon overclassification. Yang's expressed interest doesn't yet reach the position held by the strongest UFO disclosure advocate in recent Democratic presidential contests, Hillary Clinton. In 2008, Clinton told the Sun, "Yes, I'm going to get to the bottom of it." Leading up to the 2016.
How did that work out for her?
Well, evidently she lost the election day because of it.
Yeah. That's my point.
Yep. Leading to the 2016 presidential primaries, Clinton further pledged to look into Area 51, a highly classified military base in Nevada, associated with experimental aircraft tests and UFO folklore, and was even open to the possibility that aliens had already visited Earth. "I think we may have been visited already. We don't know for sure," Clinton said. The UFO issue has come a long way since Dennis Kucinich's 2008 presidential run was torpedoed, in part by leveraging his UFO sighting story to dismiss the former congressman as a fringe candidate, with mainstream politicians like former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid voicing defenses of UFO research. "I'll bet you anything that China is spending some money checking this out. I'll bet you anything that KGB Putin is spending some money checking this out," Reid told George Knapp of Las Vegas's Now I-Team in March. There you go. I do have one more story here, Dave, that actually was sent to me by a listener.
One more story.
And it's kind of interesting because it did come out. It came out yesterday.
Okay, what have we got?
A man was sentenced to 2 years for finding love through witchcraft. It's kind of interesting.
Intrigued. Go ahead.
Yeah. A man who claimed that he can offer aid to people looking for love by using magic spells was arrested and sentenced to 2 years in jail on Monday. Ariel Boiteau, whose services were publicized on social media, victimized about 200 people in several countries through a so-called witchcraft extortion scheme. His services involved instructing his clients to record videos of themselves doing sexual rituals, then demanded to pay huge amounts of money or else their videos will be released on a public website.
Oh, my.
Yeah. On Monday, the Argentine mastermind who targeted hundreds of people searching for love through an international witchcraft extortion scheme was sentenced to 2 years in federal prison. In a news release from the Office of the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of California, they reported that 31-year-old Ariel Boiteau, who advertises services on Facebook and Instagram, have provided people to or helped to find love through the use of magic spells. The release also stated that those who contacted Amares Imitados, which is the name of Boiteau's company, were instructed to record themselves performing sexually explicit rituals. Then Boiteau demanded that they pay him a large amount of money. Otherwise, he threatened to release their videos on social media. The Los Angeles Times reported that Boiteau targeted roughly 200 people in countries including the United States, Switzerland, Mexico, and Spain. An estimated 200 people in those countries, like the United States, Switzerland, Mexico, Spain, were reportedly targeted by Boiteau, according to the LA Times. Authorities said that in one case, a well-connected public figure with significant financial resources was demanded to pay $250,000. Boiteau was apprehended in Paraguay after an agent with the Department of Homeland Security who was working undercover proposed to buy another victim's recording that had been publicly posted to a website. Aside from Boiteau, the San Diego Union-Tribune reported that three other individuals, including Boiteau's 15-year-old brother, were also arrested in the witchcraft scheme. The mastermind was charged with foreign transmission of an extortionate threat. As reported by the LA Times in July, he was deported to San Diego, where he later pleaded guilty to the charge in December. So there you go.
People, 200 people around the world are so lonely that they bought into the fact that if they videotaped themselves being explicitly sexual, that they would, through magic, find love. Sad, Tim.
Yep.
Sad. How much did they get you for?
$350,000.
That explains why you never have money to buy haunted castles.
That's right.
You're constantly sending in Yang videos.
Well, me and Mr. Yang got together and we're talking about UFOs on one video. So, yeah. You know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, kids. Have a safe and happy day. And we will be back again tomorrow with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. This is Beyond the Darkness.